This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Who? Who did that?
Steve Smith, former wide receiver. NFL
he's got his own issues. He's got his own issues to worry about. I'm not worried about somebody else's opinion about Luther Burden's tape. The Chicago Bears liked the tape enough and believed in it. He's an all-conference player, all-American player. Everybody's got haters and critics. So, I mean, I don't really care.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. There is a coach.
Well, then.
Defending his player from criticism that came from maybe an unexpected source.
Coaches are going to do that. You want your head coach to defend your player. If you're a college program, that plays well, both with former players, future players, current players. You want a coach that's willing to go out there, advocate for a guy that was good for the program in Luther Burden III, good for Missouri. And along the way, Eli Drinkwitz, who has not been shy in defending Luther Burden III, took a little shot at Steve Smith. Also, he's got enough problems. Yeah, Steve Smith's had his share of issues lately, too. But it did reflect also just how scathing of a rebuke it was from Steve Smith, who acknowledged never having met Luther Burden III and evaluating everything based on tape. Do you believe that was a fair evaluation? And I guess more to the point, how concerned do you think the Bears are based on not what Steve Smith said, but the kinds of things that Steve Smith alluded to with Luther Burden III?
Yeah, I mean, I saw, I think it was on ESPN, that they were rating draft picks. And they just rated the best picks in the draft. And believe it or not, Luther Burden III was evaluated as by this particular group as the best pick in the entire draft. They thought him going where he went, the Bears did the best job of getting a player by taking him at that spot. So I got nothing but respect for Steve Smith as a player. God, that guy was one hell of a football player and a great wide receiver in the league. But I'm kind of with Eli Drinkwitz at this one. If you're just evaluating a guy based on rumors you heard about how he responded or didn't respond when the ball was going his way, he kind of didn't want to run the other route. And I think we already heard from the Bears head coach about how they're going to be watching how everyone responds when they're getting the ball and when they're not getting the ball. And it's more telling when the ball's not coming to you. Are you doing everything you can?
Was that a message?
Sure, the play, I don't.
To
it made me
Luther
wonder.
Burden III or
I thought
DJ
it might
Moore
be.
I thought
it might be more of a message to DJ or more of a message to the current team. But I think it's a message to everyone, including Luther Burden. I do think that's what you want to get across to everyone.
I look forward to seeing Luther Burden, number one, how he fits into this offense, but number two, how he comports himself in communicating this edge that everyone's talking about, because he's going to bring it to the league.
Yeah.
And he's going to come in here with something to prove. Already he has gone to social media, and yesterday, I believe, he tweeted out a photo of the NFL's tweet where they were asking, who is your early pick for Offensive Rookie of the Year? And they have a picture of Ashton Jeanty, Cam Ward, Tet McMillan, and Travis Hunter. And his tweet in response to that was, So he's already feeling and noticing things So my sense is that if he's that aware of these perceived slights, he's well aware of what Steve Smith had to say, which wasn't, it was not perceived. It was real. And it wasn't a slight. It was a diss. And he went after him in a way that I think will resonate with the young man and probably be something he has to, he might use as motivation, but he also will have to disprove it.
Yeah, well, like I said, whatever it takes, whatever you need to kind of motivate yourself or get yourself, you know, he should feel like he should have gone higher. He should be kind of mad that he didn't go in the first round. I got no problem with that. I think whatever helps you get an edge as a player, we've seen plenty of guys that have memorized every team that passed on them. And you know, I got to tell you, I was laughing because I was watching this, ESPN thing where they were talking, that wasn't ESPN, it was CBS Sunday Morning, where they were talking about how, you know, they're talking to Belichick. It was the interview girlfriend took over, and you learned that she's running his life at 24 years old. But they were saying, you know, you picked Tom Brady, and the two of you went, you know, and my wife said, oh, my God, Tom Brady went 199th? And I'm like, oh, yeah, famously, you know. And she's like, and everyone passed on him but the Patriots? And I'm like, hun, the Patriots passed on him too. He went 199. It's not like everybody else passed. Everybody passed on him, including the Patriots, over multiple rounds of the draft. And then eventually he goes with Tom Brady. Tom Brady goes with Belichick, and they become this great entity. But let's not pretend like, you know, Belichick jumped in at 12 to take Tom Brady when everyone else missed something. That is not the way it played out. You know, everyone skipped him. Everyone skipped him repeatedly. There were 198 players taken ahead of him. That's a lot. That's football teams worth of players taken in a draft.
That was a great point, passionately made. I'm sorry, but you lost me. I was distracted after you mentioned Bill Belichick in the statement.
Yesterday,
can you really get past that, Molly? Isn't that one of the more remarkable things that you have seen this week? That CBS Sunday Morning interview, which I know you watch. You like that show.
We watch.
It's a very good show.
It's a great show.
It's a wholesome. They had the great storytelling.
Like, there were so many good things in that particular show
because
there's a lot going on. The Belichick thing, the guy's selling a book, so he wants to do this interview, and he's there. And then they claim that they took it out of context, and the CBS people claim, and I believe them, that she interrupted the interview about seven times.
That's not hard to believe.
And so they included it because it told it said something about the story. So then they claim now that, oh, no, that she didn't say anything, and it's just the way they cut it.
It compelled him to issue a statement.
Wow.
A rather lengthy statement yesterday.
She compelled him to do what?
Well, quote, she was not deflecting any specific question or topic, but simply doing her job to ensure the interview stayed on track. Do your job.
That's not what happened, not from what I saw. I mean,
what did you see?
I saw the interview, and I saw a 24-year-old woman that was running the show. And like, everybody's response is, oh, she's running Bill's life. I mean, if I'm one of Bill's kids, I just want to make sure I was connected to him in some way. I'm just saying, she seems to have been very dominant in that interview.
I saw Bill Belichick with a really unprofessional dress.
He had an old navy shirt,
unprofessional wardrobe for a situation like that.
There was a cut on the thing.
Yeah, there was a hole in his t-shirt. If I'm the University of North Carolina, I'm deeply troubled.
If I'm his son who's helping him at the University of North Carolina.
If I'm associated with that football program right now, I've gone from being very excited to being very concerned.
I agree.
Because it does not seem to be a lot of confidence in your leader. And a guy that spent his entire career as predictable. Really, as predictable as any head coach, right? In terms of his, you knew what you were getting. You knew that the consistency in the approach was going to be there. It was a Patriot way. And now this behavior of late just seems to be very unpredictable.
I talked to a friend of mine about it, and I was like, yeah, I just watched the interview. You know, it was crazy. And he said, do you think he's diminished? And I was like, geez, I mean, that's going, you know, you're really taking a leap on that one. I just think that he kind of, you know, I don't understand.
Is
why
it not
he,
a fair question?
It might be a fair, that's why I brought it up. It's a fair question.
I believe it is a fair question.
I don't know that I can answer it is what I'm saying.
Neither one of us can.
I can't.
Nobody's
understand.
Qualified to answer
why,
that.
Why would you write a book and then not include Bob Kraft and not include various things and then open yourself up to be asked about it? You've got to understand this CBS Sunday morning show. It's not gotcha journalism. They're out there throwing softballs to the guy. And the fact that he can't connect with one was weird. It just was strange, David.
Well, the CBS Sunday morning show is intended to tell the more compelling stories that you miss, and they take time to provide a little bit more context than your typical drive-by
and they're fun,
type of
offbeat,
quick,
weird, quick
stories that lack context.
They're great.
It's really good stuff. It's very refreshing on a Sunday morning.
It's a fun thing to watch.
They do stories that are maybe a little bit off the beaten path. And
they
this
do.
Appeared to be one of them. And it really could have been a much different result, an outcome. But all of a sudden, it seemed to be contentious. And there is a contention that this was an isolated thing. And she wants the statement would lead us to believe that this didn't happen in the way that it appeared to have happened. It's hard to accept that.
No.
More likely, it's something's going on with Bill Belichick, and he's not the same guy that we thought that he was or that he appeared to be throughout his tenure in New England. And suddenly, the most consistent football coach of our generation is exhibiting a lot of erratic behavior that seems to be very strange.
You know, and I'll say this in defense of him. When you see someone fall in love, weird things happen, man. Love can be the strangest thing ever. You don't know. So I can't tell you that he's diminished. I can't tell. But he clearly is very fond of this young lady, and does seem like she's taken control of his life to an extent. And that happens when people, you know, the most shocking thing, a real love story will shock the hell out of you, because there'll be people, they did what? And he divorced her, and what happened? Love can throw off everything, and it's hard to measure. And sometimes it's like the most confusing thing I've ever seen in my life. And it seems like this one is so bizarre, and it's hard to follow that guy and the guy he was. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to interview him a few times.
Yeah, but
and that guy is sharp.
You interviewed him in his prime.
You interviewed him
at the top of his profession.
When he was in Super Bowls.
Winning championships and providing an example that others wanted to follow. And now he's a 73-year-old man in a relationship with a 24-year-old woman.
Crazy.
And it's very difficult to reconcile that.
It's crazy.
Because you're used to viewing him in a certain way.
I know. And it's just, Yeah. As someone said, you know, the way you defend is to just say she's good looking. Thanks for the text. I don't think that's a defense. I personally find the whole thing creepy.
It's uncomfortable.
David, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I
don't think you're alone, Molly.
24-year-old daughter. And I mean, holy mother of Jesus. It's insane to me. But like I said, whatever's going on, something's going on.
Yeah, and I don't think you're alone there. And I think that's what makes this such a bizarre story. And it's so new. Is it newsworthy or is it salacious to discuss this? I don't think that it is, because Bill Belichick has thrust himself back into the coaching profession. He wants to. He's the leader of a football program
college
football program. Regardless of how professionalized college sports have become, he is now the leader of the North Carolina football program. And as that guy, his example matters. His example does matter to 18 to 22-year-old young men. And that's why somewhere Bubba Cunningham is cringing. his way through watching this behavior by Bill Belichick. Because if you're the athletic director of this football coach, you're like, please make it stop. Somebody make it stop.
I mean, anyway, it was weird, David. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it was weird.
I don't want to be bad-mouthing, you know, anybody or anything, but it's different.
No, it's different. So we'll get off that topic because it's uncomfortable, and I think that we have said all that we need to say about a 73-year-old man involved with a 24-year-old woman. Now, I think when you look at the Bears, getting back to the Bears draft, where did you see that Luther Burden was the best pick in the draft?
Yeah, it was some ESPN thing. They were doing like a measuring of all the different draft picks. It basically, for when they got him and the time in the draft, that was as good a pick as there was.
What's his ceiling to you?
What's his ceiling? Yeah. His Pro Bowl ceiling. I mean, if he's as fast, as quick, as good after the catch as everyone seems to believe, I think that he's a guy. His ceiling is higher than a lot of different people in the league. If he is a weapon, an explosive weapon, who can raise the Bears' offense, then I think you're going to see it fairly quickly.
How much credence do you put in the fact that he does have some history with Steve Smith? Probably went over the top, but he did observe things other people have observed.
Yes.
How much do you think the Bears are concerned with how Luther Burden III will behave once he isn't maybe the focal point of an offense? The first game where he gets two targets.
It's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate concern. He's the kind of guy that is, you know, he's going to come in and be Keyshawn Johnson, just give me the damn ball. He'll write a book about it, but I don't think he's got that status as top pick like he does. So it'll be very interesting to see how he fits in with it. But I don't worry about like egomaniacal personalities until they actually show up. And I think that they know going in that he really wants the ball and wants to make plays. And I think that I'm putting a lot of trust into Ben Johnson to control everybody in his offense and make sure they get the ball and make sure they can make the plays that you want them to make. So if he is as good as he thinks he is, then let's see him. Let's see it happen. It will happen.
Is he good enough to become the Bears' number one option?
I don't know that till I see him play, but I think that he's good enough to be one of those kind of guys. DJ is not the kind of guy that demands the ball, that gets mad about stuff. He talked about being a little kid and playing quarterback and how everybody comes at you, they want the ball. And that's kind of he has an understanding of that. But I think I don't believe there is a receiver or an offensive weapon on the Bears that is bigger than the team, bigger than the quarterback, bigger than the play caller. So I don't believe that you can control that stuff by just complaining about it. But if this guy has got like cheetah-type speed and can do things on the field, let's see it. I think we're all on board with it.
It's an upgrade in weaponry, but I think it's incomplete because they still have yet to add a veteran running back that we think that they need. And yes, I know as I much confidence as we have in Kyle Manungai, Greg Schiano was terrific talking about the young man yesterday. But I still think there's a running back out there to be signed, whether it's J.K. Dobbins.
J.K. Dobbins available.
Who is available.
Yes.
How expensive would that be? Is Nick Chubb going to be cheaper? Would Nick Chubb be a better fit? There's some people out there. Lewis Riddick on ESPN is well-respected, had this to say about Nick Chubb and the Bears.
Look, with Ben Johnson now, with the kind of weaponry that he has at his disposal to really, you know, allow, you know, Caleb Williams to use, I think really it comes down to play design and then play sequencing. And I think that's where really you're going to see Caleb Williams really benefit. Because, look, there was many times last year under Shane Waldron that you wind up like watching the tape and going, look, these wide receivers don't have very good spacing. I don't understand why that play call on second down followed the play call that they had on first down. That's Ben Johnson's specialty. And look, RC talked about the fact that, you know, they want to protect Caleb Williams first and foremost. Well, how do you protect him? By running the football, setting up play action. Have a real credible running threat. Right, so they rebuilt the interior three of their offensive line. That should be able to get some movement at the point of attack. I said earlier today, Nick Chubb needs to go ahead right now and be beating down the door of the Chicago Bears and saying, hey, look, I want to run behind this offensive line. I want to be a part of this. And Caleb Williams should be going, yeah, Nick, come play for us. Because think about this. Think about some of the people that we have on the perimeter now as far as us being able to stretch the field, attack every blade of grass. Not every team can just load the box and play eight-man fronts. So there's going to be space for anyone. And who's better at calling plays depending upon how defenses are trying to play his offense than Ben Johnson? So Caleb Williams, look, in year two right now, the sky's the limit for this young man. The sky's the limit. I think personally, the conversation RC is going to quickly turn to how much, you know, him and Jaden Daniels. Now it's going to be, I think it's going to be a conversation where they're going to be talked about together in unison again, because Caleb has so much more at his disposal now.
So that is good stuff, and that's telling you, yes, they need the running back. They need to get the inside of the field set up so they open up the outside guys. It was Matt Miller on ESPN, and here's what he had to say, David.
And my final guy, if you've watched our draft coverage this year, you know my guy's Luther Burden III from Missouri. I had him as a top 15 player. He fell to the Chicago Bears. This is one of those I'm betting that the NFL was wrong and I was right on. Burden can be a factor in the Chicago offense. He'll start as a slot receiver. He was the best of any receiver in this class in terms of yards after catch ability. The way he sees the field and his speed at 206 pounds, he can run around you, he can run through you, and he is paired with a great offensive mind in Ben Johnson.
That's his favorite pick.
Love it. Strong opinions. Nick Chubb with the Bears, a good fit. I love that Matt Miller said that about Luther Burden III.
Yeah, it's great stuff. All right, we got Casey Johnson next. We're going to talk some basketball. Big trade coming. We've made a bunch of fantasy trades. What does Casey say? Molly and Hall on the Score.
And now, KC Johnson.
Kobe White, pull up three, over carries the vert and nails it.
Chicago Bulls insider from Chicago Sports Network.
I've covered the NBA for a long time.
KC Johnson with Mullen Haw.
Bulls.
On 670 The Score.
Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Casey Johnson. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, aturo.com. Casey, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing all right.
We're playing fantasy basketball.
Yes, we are.
And we are wheeling and dealing, my friend. You wouldn't believe some of the trades we have in mind. I guess now that that Damian Lillard is out next year, and a certain Greek basketball player may want to come see some of the wonderful restaurants we have in Chicago, we've decided that we can make a deal for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and we've been wheeling and dealing on that front. Should we just contact AK directly, or should we just make a few more calls?
Let us know, Buzzkill.
thanks, David. I think we got a Secretary of State involved now. We got a lot going on here.
Yes.
I'm against the trade just because I don't want to have to say that last name on the air multiple times a night. You know, that's a tough pronounce. It's a long shot. I mean, a lot of things need to happen. I mean, first of all, let's analyze the relationship between Giannis and that franchise and that community, right? I mean, that's a pretty unique situation in the league. Giannis has always professed loyalty to that place. Obviously, they can, you know, supersede that loyalty and trade him without his desire or his buy-in. I would be surprised if that would happen. But let's start there. That step has not happened yet. If it were to happen, I mean, it's going to be a bidding war. I assume it's not going to be conducted like the Luka Doncic trade. And I'd like to hear the package you guys came up with for the Bulls, because I'm struggling to find a suitable one.
couple firsts.
How many?
Two.
Firsts, Davis?
How many would it take?
I mean. You're talking about, I would say minimum three. You're talking about top three player in the world.
Okay.
And
three first, Kobe White and Vooch. Would that get it done?
Yeah.
No.
I have not spent a lot of time on this, but what I would say is, obviously I've heard some of the chatter. And it's going to be a dominant theme to this NBA offseason.
Right.
Undeniably. And look, the whole league, descends upon Chicago very shortly for the NBA draft combine and the draft lottery. So it will be, I'll be walking around asking people about it for sure. But, you know, even like yesterday, I got a, you know, you guys get those emails from like the odds makers sites, different sites. So I got one from yesterday. I just for fun opened it. The Bulls were like 50-1 shots. I mean, it's like if Vegas says that, I mean, you know, I don't see a pathway for a trade for the Bulls. It's fun to talk about. It's fun to fantasize about. I assume that the Bulls would get involved in that bidding, but I don't see a pathway for a Bulls trade.
You never know what could happen in the NBA offseason. So while I accept your rational approach to this Giannis conversation, now do Zion. I don't think it's the same idea. I think there's not as much interest if you're the Bulls. You have to be very cautious about somebody whose availability has been an issue.
Right.
But will there be conversations, do you anticipate, about Zion Williamson coming to Chicago?
Well, I mean, this is going to be like buzzkill radio here, but I mean, you guys heard Arturis's season-end news conference, did
yes.
you not? I mean, that sounded like a guy to me who was tired of burning first-round picks and, you know, going for the quick fixes attempts, and sounded like a guy who was asking fans for patience to do this the methodical way through the draft. That's what I heard. I could be wrong, but that's what I heard. Now, he did say, you know, I'm open to all opportunities, and he's proven before that if he sees the right opportunity, he will cash in draft picks to try to get it done. But that's not what I heard. And certainly in my conversations with people around the franchise, that is not the mindset that I'm entering the offseason with. I'm entering the offseason with the mindset of adding this first-round pick, looking for an opportunity in free agency, and mostly running this roster back with internal improvement. I mean, how many times have you heard internal development, internal
yes.
improvement
yes.
throughout that news conference? So again, I'm not trying to like say buzzkill. I know that the NBA offseason is like fans' favorite time of the year. It's the best soap opera league in the world. I just that's not the lens with which I'm viewing the Bulls offseason.
I'm curious, when you think about a guy like Zion, would you even want that? Would you even? He's only played in, I think it's 48% of the games he could have played in. Would you recommend making a deal like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, as good as he is, and if they brought him here, I'd be Lauryn Hill. You know, the joy of my world would live in Zion. But I don't know that I really want them to bring that guy to town. I'm not sure that's the answer.
Yeah, I personally value availability a lot, obviously, and I look, his talent is again undeniable, and he's a unique player for sure. Matchup nightmare, et cetera, et cetera. I think to cash in what it would take to get him here,
yeah.
And it wouldn't certainly be as much as Giannis, obviously. But I'm with you, Mully. That wouldn't be a fit for me given his injury history.
So you do not expect a major trade this offseason for the Bulls?
No. I mean, you I didn't catch your guys' show the day after Arturis' season end news conference.
Right.
I mean, wasn't
we canceled it? We didn't have one.
We
didn't have one. We decided not to have one. That
you
day.
Basically told us everything the guy was going to say when we talked to you before that news conference.
Who needs AK when he got KC?
Yeah, but I literally was like, oh, well, then you were so spot on. And I mean it. And I was, like, a lot of people were angry. I was kind of numb. I already knew.
It was as if KC had written what AK was reading off of.
It was. You were unbelievable that morning.
That should be the title of your autobiography, Mully. A lot of people were angry. I was just kind of numb.
Wow. Well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's like we talk to people around the team. I mean, that's our job, right? So, like, that's why I get it, man. I mean, Giannis, it's like, you know, it's big. And like I said, if it happens and he's put in play, of course you make a phone call, but that's still not the mindset that I'm entering this offseason with, number one. And number two, I don't see a Bulls package that makes that work.
But I'm relying on Adam Silver now. The lucky 1.7 needs to strike again. What do you think?
Hey, we'll be there May 12th. Let's go.
Freeze the envelope. Isn't that how it was done with Patrick Ewing?
I'm relying on Alexi Giannoulis. I think that he can get it done.
Oh, he can get it done.
He tweeted out yesterday, and I was all over that because, you know, if you have somebody on your side in government in Chicago, you might have a shot.
And hey, I had lunch at a Greek Islands yesterday. Does that count?
Oh, that's great.
Somebody's going to put two and two together. They're going to tweet out a photo of you or making your order, having your lunch, and thinking, he's getting ready for Giannis coming to town.
Oh. Yeah.
This segment's off the rails. How about those games, guys?
Yeah. I mean, listen, the NBA has been great, and it's fun to watch. And it's just, I think we've gone too long without, like, a playoff game to talk about. And so we're all just kind of in this weird mode of, you know, here's how we fix it. Why don't we try this? And there's really no way around it. I think he's giving you he did tell us exactly what they're going to do. And they're just going to roll it back again and hope to improve.
But all joking aside, Molly, that point, yep, I couldn't hit home more emphatically. I mean, Cam Smith and I talked about this on our latest edition of our podcast. I've been so into this first round. The matchups have been awesome. The basketball has been fantastic. The physicality and entertainment level has been off the charts. And I'm just sitting there going, man, I miss covering playoff basketball. It's just such a different animal. And you can understand why, like, again, the Bulls got criticized for this approach, but you can understand why they wanted some of their young players to experience that, because it really just is a different animal. And you've seen that in some of these first-round games. So I'm with you guys. It'd be fun to cover playoff hoops at the United Center again, and hopefully that day is sooner rather than later.
KC, is there a team in the playoffs that has surprised you more than others?
Well, I think I don't think many people expected Minnesota to close them out in five games, especially with a road victory. I just love the way they play. I mean, you got a guy in Anthony Edwards, who obviously is ascending to legit, you know, lead star. And then those role players, Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, it's just a really well-built team. The proud veterans and Conley Jr. and Gobert, DiVincenzo off the bench. It'd be the Timberwolves or the Pistons have been my two favorite teams to watch in the first round. I love what the Pistons have done, showing their toughness and, you know, just their hunger and their physicality and their inability to back down. They're a fun team to watch. And Cade Cunningham is another rising star. And that's what this is about, man, watching these players play on this stage and kind of, you know, stake claim to greatness. I mean, that's where your name is made in the playoffs, and seeing guys like Edwards and Cunningham and new faces do it is really refreshing for those of us who've watched this league for a long time.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you for a sobering conversation.
Thank you, KC.
Yeah. Right. We'll talk to you. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. That is KC Johnson. Does a remarkable job.
I knew that was coming.
I know. I knew.
I mean, I knew that was coming.
But you know, we need a dose of reality.
Yeah,
that's why
we talked to him.
Right.
I mean, that's why.
Right. And he did tell us exactly what was going to be said, and exactly. I mean, I did come out of that news conference. You know, we had already had that conversation. Yeah. We already knew what was said.
Well, he's as plugged in as anybody who's around that team, so he understands the limitations to, the Bulls' roster creativity.
Yeah,
because they're taking a very practical approach to the offseason. And I think that we sit here on a daily basis hoping that they will take a more
impractical
or inventive approach, and maybe an irrational approach. But I don't think it's realistic to trade for Giannis to come to Chicago. But when he gets an early exit to the playoffs, one can dream.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, again, I think the complication is that because Dame Lillard isn't there next year, you know, I think you've come to this almost sobering conclusion about the Milwaukee Bucks that time has passed them by, that he is not going to win a title, another title there, period, end of story, because they have to wait. They're going to waste next year waiting to come back and try it again. And
yes,
they
will.
Feel like he's in his prime and he wants to blossom and go elsewhere. I don't know. If I were him, I would. But he does have a great connection to that city. And he's a great superstar. He no doubt about it.
He's a tremendous ambassador for sports in general, let alone the NBA.
No question about it. All right. 312-644-6767.
Little nugget on a Bears draft pick when we come back.
All right, we'll get to that. Mully and Haw on the Score.
And in case y'all aren't familiar with my game, let me remind you, I am a visionary. I am a revolutionary. I am Seth freaking Rollins. And I am here to tell you that with the 56th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the greatest franchise in the NFL, the Chicago Bears, select Ozzie Trapillo, tackle from Boston College. Let's burn it down and bear down, Chicago.
Ah, beautiful stuff.
Never
Mully
get told.
No, that guy, I got to tell you,
oh,
man.
Oh, we got to get him on.
He's the best.
We bring him on.
Yeah,
he won't kill
go.
Our buzz.
No.
No.
No. KC shot us down.
Killing but, cheerfulness. That's what the KC stands for.
I like it. I like it.
All right, so Ozzie Trapillo is a very important figure in this 2025 draft class.
And we just learned another little piece of information about him.
The offensive tackle from Boston College, a second-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. Ryan Poles, general manager for the Bears, was on the Bears radio network and told them that Ozzie Trapillo will begin at left tackle.
And we had a discussion about
yeah, we
this.
Did.
And you don't like it, and you kind of shot it down. But I was kind of like, who else is going to play that position?
I prefer to look at it as express concern rather than shoot it down. I don't like to shoot down anything because I think you can always try everything. So you have a lot of alternatives.
You're not the killer of cheerfulness.
No, I'm not. I will not kill your buzz. I do think that, to me, my point was, if you find somebody who is more comfortable at a position that he has really played well at a high level for the last 2 years at Boston College, changing him at the NFL level raises some concerns. I don't like experimenting with rookies. But look, they know more what they have here in Ozzie Trapillo, and also they trust their new Dan Rauscher, their offensive line coach.
Listen, they drafted this kid to play left tackle.
You do that in the second round.
I think when you talk about their ability to trade back and to pick up someone, then you talk about the fact that Ryan Poles' father played with this kid's father. The fact that Poles is from Boston College, this kid played at Boston College. The fact that the offensive coordinator was
Ben Johnson's roommate.
Was his roommate, right? How weird is that?
There are so many connections here
that it doesn't look like it was haphazard. Well, they wound up with this guy. It looks like he was a guy they were looking at and identifying and may have decided – yeah, he's got a good chance to play a left tackle.
Because his character convinced them that they can work with him, that they can trust him, and that he's going to be able to progress at a reasonable rate.
His character will only mean he's willing to try left tackle. That doesn't mean your character isn't what determines what position you can play. It is your ability and your athleticism, and he's got to be able to do all the things you need to do at a left tackle position. But they got a fifth-round pick at left tackle currently.
Well, no. See,
and this guy's a second-round pick.
That's draft pedigree. With experience, you look at it. You say fifth-round pick. I say three-year starter.
I agree with
so
that.
So I think
but
when
he's
you
injured.
Look at it that way, I know he's injured, which is why this is a smart plan.
His contract is coming to
He's coming into a contract year.
Yes.
You have competition at that position, which is what Ryan Poles promised everyone, and Ben Johnson encouraged every time we talk to him.
You have a third-round draft pick from a year ago that you have no idea who came pre-injured, and you don't know if he has the ability. You think he has the size and the feet and all the rest
Mully,
of it.
Let's be honest
to
here.
To play left tackle.
If
you
had confidence that was true, you would not have drafted a left tackle
kid.
In the second round.
No. And again, the very fact that it also tells you that they don't believe that Darnell Wright is going to be the left tackle. He's going to live up to his last name, be the right tackle.
He is
like
the right
Wright
tackle.
I know
indeed.
It's spelt differently, but it's pronounced the same.
It's a good development.
Yes.
It's an interesting nugget. and they're going to give him a chance. That doesn't mean he can't move back. He can still be a swing tackle, and they might trust his ability to play on the right side because it's more familiar.
If he's a swing tackle, then he needs to know how to play left tackle and right tackle.
But in their perfect world, do you think that he starts on week one?
No, I don't. But I think in their perfect world that that left tackle starts at week one.
The in guy their
that
perfect is, world, Braxton Jones time recovers –
yes.
Well,
yes.
Is serviceable, is yes. Your version of Chuck Leno Jr., the guy that will start 15 games next year.
That's right.
And Ozzie provides depth at both positions. And if Braxton Jones walks after next year, you have protection. And you might even encourage that. Mm-hmm. Or you might, who knows? But I think that you drafted
maybe
him.
Maybe you resign him, yeah, who knows?
To be the left tackle of the future.
Yeah, and it doesn't surprise me that they're starting that way. I never believed they were moving the other kid.
Okay.
I never believed that.
Okay, well, you know best. Mully knows best.
I don't know best.
Mully knows best.
On the rare occasion.
I think he tells us that every morning.
Even the blind squirrel. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
So I kind of, whatever.
Hey, we get to talk baseball next.
We got Bruce Levine. He's our guy. He's got the Cubs in a shorter window than you imagine, and we'll get a chance to talk about it next. Mully and Hall on the Score.